Welcome, Vicky, to Business Uncomplicated. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. Although we did have a rough start to this event,
yes.
Which is, we were saying, is ironic because we're talking about technology and AI and all this stuff.
Things change and then everything goes crazy, and how do you manage?
Exactly. It's very difficult. You know, I mean, we're starting about 20 minutes late because there's been technical glitches on both sides, I think. And here we are talking about technology. It's like it's listening, you know?
Which it could very well be. Let's not lie.
Listen, you know, now that SpaceX is live and he's going to take over first trillionaire, he's going to take over the world with AI, and we're going to be living on the moon. And, you know, it's interesting times we live in, to say
the least. Interesting times. I think that's a Chinese curse. I think it's like, may you live in interesting times. That's a Chinese curse. I don't want to live in interesting times. I want to live in boring times. I don't know about you guys. But.
Well, it's funny because, you know, my kids are 12 and 13. And so, you know, my husband and I are older. We're in our 50s. So we adopted them when we were older. We'll sometimes show them stuff from the 70s or the 60s. And, you know, one time my husband showed them Little House on the Prairie. And my daughter literally is like, oh, is that how you grew up? And I'm like, listen.
We may be old, but.
Like, I did have air conditioning in my house. And, you know, we did have indoor toilets.
You had it to me, right?
But when you think about the rapid change of technology and the adaptive nature that all of us have to go through, it's just accelerating.
It's right? Accelerating. It's really scary. I heard in a recent class that I was taking, that part of the problem right now is that we're in the middle of like the Industrial Revolution all over again. You know what I mean? So we don't have the perspective. So when we read about the Industrial Revolution, we're like, that was so cool. You know, it brought things up into the modern era. There are railroads, you know, there were factories, et cetera. And we see it and we can look at it with, you know, the benefit of hindsight and how it created jobs. But during the real Industrial Revolution, people were terrified, you know, just like people are scared right now, you know, because there's going to be disruption and we don't know. We're not on the other side yet.
Into a conversation, and we didn't introduce who you are. So let's take a couple of minutes and take a giant step back. Vicky Oliver, welcome again. Why don't you give our audience a little bit about you and your background? And we have a lot to talk about once we get through that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Vicky Oliver. I have written 6 business books. They are targeting the stressed out corporate professional, and they help with issues such as job hunting and bad bosses. Like, one of them is called Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. I'm sure we have all experienced at least one of those, if not several. And I tend to write from the middle of the hierarchy, like the person who has a boss or bosses, plural, and also may have some people that he or she is supervising as well. Because I feel like the middle is where most of the anxiety strikes. Right. So that's what I do. I'm a generalist, not a specialist. And that's what I like to write about.
But. Well,
go ahead. I love that because I feel like the middle of the organization is also where you've got strategy coming down from the top, but now you own execution. And that's where we love is, okay, how do we operationalize the engines to put that strategy in motion? And it's tough because you're getting it from both levels. You've got the top direction and you've got the bottom up reality, which is where all of that anxiety seems to really sit with. How do I get this done in a realistic environment that I'm living in every day?
Right. Also, I mean, I think that, let's say you're a middle manager, you also have the pressure of having to seem like things are seamless, you know, it's all under your control, right? And you have that extra, you know, maybe like internal pressure to prove that you know what you're doing and that things are great.
Yes. Well, and it is that, I mean, I've been there myself personally, and a lot of people, you know, we know have been there. And it's like you're interpreting that strategy to your point, Andy, And you have to your point, Vicky, you have to make it all positive, like, because nobody wants to hear the negative. And it's like, well, there are challenges, guys. And if I keep on framing it in the positive, then you don't take it seriously. And then when it all falls apart, you're like, how come I didn't know about it? Because you didn't want to hear it. Or I've been giving you the updates every week and you haven't been reading them, or you haven't been paying attention in the meeting, or whatever the or is. And so those people in the middle honestly have the more tough job, because they have to rally the team, to your point, Andy, to get the execution. Come on, guys, this is great. Like, let's do it, and have to be that cheerleader, all the while knowing that they're like, this is not the right direction and these people are not listening to me and this is going to fail spectacularly, but I can't let my team down or know that, right? Right. You have to be that champion.
Yeah, you have to be the champion. You know, it's like a fine balance, I think, between, you know, transparency, and then you don't want to bum people out though, right? So it's like, you know, you're holding certain things. Like an account executive I used to work with told me that she told her people only like 60% of what was going on, you know, to avoid, you know, the just deflating them, you know, not to lie, but just not to deflate people.
Right. So how do middle managers get through that?
Right.
You know, suddenly we're in a job because we're good at a job, typically is the typical pass. And now you're like, oh, and now I have to manage up and manage down. How do I learn how that new job is? Because typically we're just handed the responsibility and none of the training.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that we're trained actually properly. When I was in college, let's say, I did not learn how to manage people, you know? Right. And then when I had my first like five jobs or something, I did not really know how to manage people. And then eventually, like a completely different task, which was in my case, my writing ability, I was in advertising, my writing ability, my creativity was the thing that elevated me. And then suddenly there's people on top of me, people below me. And like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to manage these people. Like, you know, send me back to school. It's like one of the things, like you have to sort of learn it on the job. And really, I don't think there is a lot of training with that, you know, and, you know, somebody's people skills, like your emotional skills, the empathy skills, those type of skills factor a lot in how well you'll perform. And before that, really, you probably weren't judged on that stuff at all.
Right? Well, and I'm going to say something, and it's not meant to be sexist, but I think that's why women make better leaders, because yeah. You guys are naturally more empathetic than men.
Yeah, I agree.
And better listeners than men. And so those skills, to your point, that you need to learn or acquire, because I will say when I was first, you know, thrust into a leadership role, I didn't know anything. But I was lucky to have a mentor as my boss who is like, Ian, no. Do this, shift your style, like stop and listen to what they're saying. And he happened to be a man, but he was just he was older. He was in his 60s. He was just very seasoned.
Right.
But those skills you're talking about, there's not one company I've worked for that will say, oh, you're about to be promoted to a manager. Let me walk you through the skills that you need and then assess them. Well, you're not really an empathetic person. So like, you got to work on that, right?
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting. I feel like one of the places where I worked, they had these feedback forms where the people who worked under you graded you on certain, you know, qualities. And then, of course, we also had regular old performance reviews where our bosses also graded us on slightly different things. Those, I think that kind of feedback is really helpful. I think you can learn a lot when people feel like they're not going to be punished for saying what they really think. You know, maybe they don't give you a 5, they give you a 3, okay, on something. And then you have to sort of evaluate like what they said. And I really believe in that. And I just want to say something about mentors too, because, you know, we're living in a world, I think, of fastly disappearing mentors. There's like no mentorship. Most places have, you know, they've cut out so many people that they just don't really have like those programs in place. Many, many places don't have them. But I have my own theory about mentors, which is I think you just have to find somebody in the world who cares about your own development and who is not competing with you, you know, and who will guide you. And sometimes I think that person could be, for example, somebody that you used to work with. It could be a former boss who's left, or it could be somebody even under you who's fabulous, or it could be somebody who doesn't work at the company. I think if you, one looks at just gathering people around them who are helpful, you know, who have great ideas for you and who care about your success, I think it's really almost as good as having a mentor in the company.
Yep. Yeah. And I love that, because in an age when everything is changing, when jobs are uncertain, there's just a lot of shifting parts right now. I like that you still have control over your own, you know, what, how you manage it. And you can go find these even if your current work environment is not providing it for you. But for the executives who are listening and who are thinking, yep, this is probably exactly where my middle managers are, what should they be thinking of in terms of how do I take that as I'm taking heads out, because AI is replacing jobs right now, but how do I still maintain that sanity in my middle managers?
I think, you know, the spirit of we're all in this together, we're all learning this at the, you know, we all have to make this giant leap would help. I think training helps. And I think really, like we were speaking before, I think, you know, empathy also helps, not looking down on people that aren't acclimating as fast. You know, maybe you team up, you know, a younger worker, not to paint like a giant brush, but, you know, a younger worker with an older worker, and have them help them through like these bumps that we're experiencing. You know, I think trying to be creative in how you look at hierarchy also, like we're all trying to learn this beast, you know, and once you learn something, then it changes, right? Like today, right? The interface changed, right? Disaster, the interface changed yet again, you know? And we're all trying to navigate it together. And I think that that helps. And, you know, also just generally, I think if your people believe in the mission that you are doing, I think also that really helps too. I'm not talking about mission statements. I mean, just the mission. If they buy into it, you know, they feel like the company is trying to do something positive, I think that will also help.
Yeah, so let's take a little detour for a second. So let's go back 6 years when the world stopped and COVID happened. Because, you know, prior to that, going into the office as a consultant traveling, right, and being face-to-face with people, at least you're establishing personal relationships and you're establishing a connection, right? It's a cup of coffee, it's a dinner, it's a breakfast, whatever, but you get to know people. Then COVID happens and everybody's thrust into this world of seeing each other on the other side of a computer. And then it doesn't come back really. Now, back to earth office policies are happening, but we had a CEO on who said, misguided, completely misguided. I go into my office and everybody's on a Zoom call. Why are we doing this? So what do you think happened over the last 6 years to actually exacerbate everything we've just talked about for the onboarding of new people? You have a daughter who's just coming out of college and entering the workforce. So what do you think about all that happened to the psychology of everybody?
Right. I mean, it was, okay. So first of all, it was unbelievably disruptive, right? Like, suddenly, nobody could go into their offices, and we all had to work from our own homes and apartments, right? So, I mean, the good side of that, I think, is that it made us more technology savvy. We had to become savvy. We had to run meetings from our own homes, you know? We had to show up. We had to balance, like, whatever else is happening in our life with that. And so that was the good part of it. I think the bad part of it is that we just became screen dependent. We don't really know how to have conversations. You know, it's so difficult, especially if you are, like, in college and then you got out of college and then, boom, that was your first. You're like, if your first year in the workforce was 2020, you know?
Right.
You don't probably have like the skills, conversational, savvy, you know, the listening abilities. It's very, very difficult. And then, of course, you know, that allowed companies to get rid of people. And the onboarding thing was horrible during that period of time. I mean, even people who were younger than that, who were in school during that period of time, you know, they didn't learn much, you know?
Absolutely.
They didn't learn anything. So I think it's very tough. I mean, the one thing with screens is that it's not giving you the whole body language of the person, right? I experienced it. I was back in school, actually, in during COVID. And our first year was all online, right? And I made all these mental images of what people actually look like, right? And then the next year, we were back in school, but with masks on. And then I realized all of my suppositions were wrong, you know? If I thought somebody was heavy set, they were thin. If I thought they were thin, they were heavy, you know? If I thought they were short, they were tall. Everything I thought was dead wrong.
Right.
And there's just so much information that we get when we're just sitting next to somebody, you know, across like a desk. We see them, their whole body language. Do they like it? Screens mask what people really think, you know?
Absolutely.
Helpful, you know, I personally think it's more helpful for introverts than extroverts. I think, you know, because maybe introverts don't want you to know every single thing that they're thinking, you know? But it's still, you don't get all the information. There's so much information that body language conveys.
Right.
True. And when you're not in front of a screen, you can see that. But also it breaks down. I think that the screen forces, sometimes it allows us more so to keep a distance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so then we don't ask the questions. And it really is the dumb questions. Like, we're afraid of asking questions a lot of the time is what I see. And it is getting those questions answered. That's what builds the bond and builds the trust between people, whether it's a client relationship or whether it's a coworker relationship.
Yeah.
That seems to be such a challenge for so many people is take the risk, ask the question, and then answer the question honestly.
It's so funny you said that. I like when I was back in school, I was on this magazine and they were teaching us like a certain like a WordPress system, you know, how to make it look gorgeous. All the articles that were coming in, it was like a political magazine. And I was the only person asking questions, right? Everybody else was younger than me. Nobody asked questions, right? I was like, how come I'm the only person asking questions? And somebody said, well, I'm just going to figure it out on by myself later. But the truth is, like, you learn by asking questions. That is how you learn.
Yeah.
Right. So several months later, I understood the system much better than they had. And I'm sure it was because I asked that I wasn't embarrassed.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think goes into, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, this anxiety that people have. And I think some of it is fueled by screens. Some of it is by technology. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but there is an anxiety that I feel like is really crippling people in their ability to ask for help, in their ability to seek help. And they're using Claude, AI, whatever it might be to answer rather than actually connecting with people, all because of this crippling anxiety of, I don't know what I'm doing.
I agree. I mean, it's sort of an imposter syndrome on a big level. And there's so much to learn. It's so vast, you know? And then, like I said, then it changes. Like once you learn it, it all changes and then you relearn it. So like you're constantly on edge and you're expected to just keep learning and learning and learning and learning and learning. And I think that is the difference. Like that's what's different now than like 10 years ago, you know?
Well, and when you ask the questions, you open up a dialogue, right? So when we come in as consultants to new projects, you're meeting everybody for the first time. There's a lot of things you don't know about how a company runs and their processes or procedures. And so sometimes you assume things, sometimes you don't. You just ask sometimes very innocent questions that they're like, oh, no, we don't do that. We don't have a process for that. Or we don't. And as consultants, we're like, great, more billable hours. No. but then you say, oh, you open up the idea for them or the possibility of like, we can do this better. Or we can challenge this idea. Or they'll say, oh, you know what? I was talking to a CIO the other day and we're talking about something around the cost. And I said, well, but when you think of the benefits here, it's X. Like, why wouldn't we do? That's a great idea. That's how I'm going to phrase that. It's the dialogue and the back and forth that takes you out of, anybody can learn a process. Like a process like supply chain. Goes down the chain. Everybody's putting their widget in the box. And then somebody comes in and says, well, why do you guys put the widgets in the box that way? Right. Well, that's because I've always been told to put the widget in the box that way. All our heads want to explode when we hear that. You're open up to the idea of, well, but the widget could go in the box up there and all the boxes are like, you know. So I think that the other thing people are missing in this kind of faceless world in technology is this to your points, is this dialogue that opens up and this relationship that's built. And I'm not sure how young people who never go into an office and never interact actually grow their careers,
right?
Actually get ahead. And I don't know how you promote somebody, and especially into a middle management leader position, like where we began the call talking about, who manage other people who have never met these people, who've never managed people, who've never been in an office environment.
Right. Also, it just may not be, they may not really know how to interact with people. The other thing is, in terms of careers, I think people should expect to have to change their careers several times, and not just say, okay, I'm going to learn this and then I'm going to, I think transferable skills will be very, very necessary in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you coach that mindset? Because I think that's a big change, particularly with some of us who might have gray hair, to recognize that that is the new world. How do you coach people on just that mindset shift?
Well, part of it is just life experience. Like, you think you're going into one direction and then you don't, and then whatever, you hate your boss, you leave, you're not being promoted properly. You end up saying, what other skills do I have? How can I transfer them? And I think it's really just coaching people to say, try to think of it as skills accumulation.
Love that.
And you're not so task oriented. It's more about your skills, and those skills, creativity, perhaps empathy, problem solving, these skills can transfer across different, vertical jobs, and just to try to stay open too. You may not get your dream job. You probably won't have your dream job. It may take you 5 jumps to get into a dream job, but if you keep looking at it as steps that you're taking and learning and growing, you can do that. Also moving horizontally sometimes in a company ends up being the better move. It's just staying open. And without mentors, I think you have to either find them on your own or mentor yourself, One way I used to do is I would work backwards, right? I'd be in a place and I would just say, okay, where do I want to be 5 years from now? Okay, what does that mean? Where do I need to be 3 years from now? Where do I need to be next year? Just work backwards,
right?
And write your goals for yourself, and just try to keep moving and growing.
Yeah, I like that. I'm wondering if that's, we always think of the corporate ladder, right?
Right.
But it's not a ladder per se.
It's not a ladder. It's not a ladder because, first of all, those half of the rungs, not to be dramatic, but half of the rungs are gone. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. So there's, okay, so those are missing. I think of it more as jumps. And sometimes, sometimes you have to jump industries to get to keep moving. And at the end of the day, it's not really, I don't think, about money as much as learning. If you're learning, you're growing. And if you're not learning, you're not growing. It's just that simple.
And that's a really interesting point because, when we talk about training and we talk about training leaders and there's none of that, a lot of the learning, quote unquote, that happens is, corporate compliance, all that stuff. And although people will say, oh, you should be a lifetime learner, there are some people who are natural learners, right, who are curious and want to learn. And then there are other people who are I just want the money. And so I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that next paycheck. And we've worked with both, right?
Right, right.
And if you have a leader who's curious and a learner, that's the best, right? If you have a leader who's super political, then there's something to be learned there, but it's a scary piece because you never know when the politics turn on you.
Right.
When you think about your writing and when you write books and you come across these ideas, how does all of what you've been through and these types of things influence what you want to write and how you want to portray that into the world? And do you purposely try to be controversial, or is it more just mirroring back society to all of us to say, make of it what you will, guys, but this is the reality?
I think I just try to have insights and start with observations, what I'm observing, who I'm talking to, and I just try to put it there, out there on the page, I'm not trying to change much, but I'm just trying to, reflect back what I see. Like that article that got me on this show, that was just something that was happening. You know, I was sitting in this place and I saw a lot of people go in and ask this complete stranger for help on their personal apps and also their work projects, giving this total stranger at the Verizon store their passwords as I sat there for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I, you know, I said to him, like, does this happen all the time, every single day? He's like, yes, this happens every single day. And then he even went so far to say it that he remembered people's passwords. I'm like, oh my God, this is awful, you know? But it was just, I just was like, wow, you know, it's happening here in this particular neighborhood. I live in New York City. And, you know, I'm curious. I'm wondering if this kind of thing is happening all over, you know? So I just try to like take things that are real, that are actually, you know, occurring, that I hear about or know about or happen to me, and then try to, you know, write them.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think corporate America, for people who've never been in it, which I think most of our listeners are, but it's not what you expect when you enter it. And it's interesting when we talk about, you know, the ladder, the rungs missing and jumping from here to here, because unless you, again, have a mentor, or unless you're aware that that's the game you're playing, right? That your value to them is your knowledge and your ability to execute against that knowledge.
Yeah.
And the more knowledge you gain, the more valuable you become. Because I think some people think college is done. I was in school for 12 years and then I was in college for 4 years. And some people go on and do their master's. Like, I'm done learning. Like, right. Now I'm going to make money and I'm going to go out and have fun and I'm going to travel and I'm going to do all these cool things. And I think nowadays people think, and then I'm going to put it on Instagram and become rich. So when you think about that, and as you know, we've all been kind of in the middle manager layer, how do you kind of impress upon that learning if you have people who don't want to learn or don't feel are grabbing that, you know?
The problem is, you know, businesses are very competitive, right? This is something I didn't really, really, truly realize until I started writing about it. But, you know, they're very, very competitive. I mean, they're like pyramids, or they used to be, you know, they used to be. They're not, it's not really that way anymore. But I'm saying, you know, one person gets to the top, right? It's brutally competitive. And to be on, you know, you have to keep your edge. And to keep the edge, I would say, you have to keep learning. But also, I think you do have to be aware of the office politics, right? Because there's always going to be somebody who's there, who's been there for like a long, long time, you know, who struggled to get where they were, you know, who resents somebody young and doing it quicker, right? So there's like those like old timer people. Maybe they're there because they brought in clients is probably the thing. Or for whatever reason, there are these old timers there. So when you're there, you don't know, like the corporate structure as they have it on paper is not exactly really, truly the real structure.
Yep.
And there's some people there, you know, who are like the real important people. They may be in the middle, you know, who knows? It could be somebody's secretary or somebody, but there are very important people. Their title doesn't reflect their importance. And until you're there for a while, you don't know what you are up against.
Yeah.
So if you go in and you're too like, oh, wow, I want to change the world here, you know, you're going to make enemies fast because somebody made it that way. You know, whatever it is that you hate, that you're trying to change, somebody created it who's still right there, possibly.
Right.
So it's a balancing act of like being like, I would say more to be ready, like to keep learning and be ready and like wait for that minute, you know, where you can pounce and prove yourself.
Well, and sometimes it is that, right? It's sitting in that meeting and somebody saying something, you'd be like, yeah, no, I like it's X, Y, and Z. And they're like, that's a really good point. Can you give me a paper on that? Can you write an email? Like, I got a meeting. Can you put a deck together? And then you're in a conversation that you didn't expect to be in, right?
It's like learning. And that's where the whole screen time, which we were talking about, that's where it hurts because it's not, you know, you have to like develop the sensitivity to the political situation. It's not just what you know, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Shift gears a little bit and let's talk about as companies are bringing AI into the workplace, what do you see that's happening? What's your Verizon story as you're watching AI come into these companies? What's that environment looking like and how's it affecting affecting people's psyche?
Okay. I think there is general panic out there. And it's just one of those things. It's like there's panic and people have to keep their heads screwed on straight and realize, like, it's here. It's not leaving. Okay. We have to master it, not allow it to master us. Right. And, you know, it's not a human being. That's the good news. It's not human. And our humanness will hopefully enable us to master it. But also, you know, to be human, like to use our own creativity, our own empathy, our own problem solving abilities, plus AI to help.
Right.
You know, it's not going anywhere.
Do you think it's going to make people worse leaders?
I don't think it is actually going to make people worse leaders. I think it should, you know, in theory, should make them better leaders, right?
Because right.
It should make people better leaders. It's, I think if we, you know, think of it as like a tool and not like a monster, we're going to be better off. Just generally speaking, it's not really a monster, you know?
Well, and I think that, you know, you kind of, as we start talking about the Industrial Revolution, and of course, we can't put ourselves in how these people felt because it happened so long ago. And we're probably experiencing some of the similar feelings they felt. But, you know, they talk about, you know, when the Ford came in with the Model A, and then, you know, everyone's like, well, what's going to happen to horses? Okay, well, horses will still be around. Like, we're not going to just shoot all the horses, guys. And then, you know, the internet. My God, the internet's going to put every retailer out of business.
Right.
And now when you think about places like Wayfair was always an internet, they're building a store, a brick and mortar store in our town.
Right.
And Amazon's talking about that. Well, they did, right? By buying Whole Foods. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting, the panic.
Yeah.
And it's like this pendulum just constantly swings. And do you think it's a result of kind of our social media bias, however you want to look at it, that causes this panic and it makes people not really pay attention to what's really happening in front of them?
I don't think it's media panic on this. I mean, AI is real. It is happening and it's moving really fast. And I think the speed of technology is the thing that is so frightening for people. You know, it's so quick, you know, unlike the Industrial Revolution, which was slow.
Right, right. This pace is extraordinary.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, the Industrial Revolution displaced people. There were people who were displaced during the revolution, you know, the Industrial Revolution. And there will be people who are displaced now, sure. You know. There will be brick and mortar stores that go under, you know. There will be some jobs that go by the wayside. You know, I mean, they're self-driving cars, right? Maybe if you're an Uber driver, you're nervous because now there's self-driving cars. Or, you know, there are all kinds of things that are going to shift. That's why it's a great idea to try to be learning new skills and to be, you know, constantly honing the skills that you have, because, you know, you may need to completely shift your thing. But it's here. You know, I mean, at colleges around the country, you know, speakers are going in and talking about AI, and those speakers are booed. Like, college students are booing the people who come and
teach them. Right.
Right. But it's not stopping the progress of it. Nothing is going to stop the progress, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm wondering to your thought about middle managers, because now we've got AI and the promise is that it will take out the bloat. And a lot of times that's middle management.
Like,
you know, are we about to see why that layer existed in the first place?
I tend to think of middle managers like in the old days, like 15 years ago, as like more process oriented. And I think what will happen is that there will be fewer processes, fewer meetings, you know, some of this stuff. And a lot of people hate meetings anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm all for it.
Yeah, right. I hate meetings myself. You know, who likes a meeting, especially if it's just an email could do the trick, right? You know, we don't need so many meetings. So I think it'll cut out layers of people. It will also, I think, hurt entry level coming in. You know, it'll hurt. The people who win will be the people who, you know, master this technology and use it. And so, yeah, there will be change, you know? I mean, somebody out there predicts that nobody will, like, work will be voluntary, which I would think would be horrible personally. Right. But yeah, there will be things that, you know, one person can now probably do the job of three, and maybe there'll be a day when one person can do a job of 10 people. And then, yes, there will be things, but there will be new jobs created that we can't see right now also, you know?
Yep. Well, there was a meme the other day which showed hundreds of people riding Pelotons and using that energy to fuel the data centers.
Right.
So there's that job in the future.
I love that.
Ride our bikes for 4 hours or 5 hours.
So that my phone can tell me, exactly what I need to do now.
We'll all be in really good shape. I mean, it's
and we're going to be wearing Aura rings, right? And they're going to tell us like what to eat and do we sleep well? Do we dream? You know, all
right. I'm thinking about what you're saying is, you know, continue to learn the skills. We know that there is so much anxiety in the workforce now. I'm wondering how much do you see, as you're observing people, that we've got a new technology to adopt? How much of anxiety do we have now? Because I am talking about AI and I have no idea what I'm actually talking about. I've got this false confidence, but I don't want anybody in the room to know that I'm actually just spouting out what Claude told me 5 minutes before this meeting.
You know, yesterday I went to a seminar and a guy who's a writer, a novelist, read a paragraph. And then I thought it was something that was in one of his novels. And I was thinking to myself, it's really not that great, you know? And then he revealed that AI had written the paragraph, you know? So I was like, oh, good. Thank you. You know,
I still know what's good.
You know, it was machine done entirely or whatever. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think, to your earlier point, I think that sometimes, you know, the Twitter universe, the X universe, you know, Instagram, all the whole social media thing possibly exacerbates our anxiety level also, you know, because everybody seems like they're richer, they're smarter, they're thinner, they've got it more together, you know, it's like a fake universe that's shown there. And I think that it kind of makes us feel like bad about ourselves, like worse about ourselves, you know? Yeah. And so I think that's part of it too. Like there's this huge beast, we have to learn it and everybody's farther ahead than I am. And we all kind of feel that way, you know, it's like a collective anxiety. You know, and we just got over the pandemic, which was like another anxiety around this. So, yeah, I think, you know, but for leaders, I think that if you realize that, you know, your own anxiety, such that it is reflected in the people who work for you, too. And, you approach it that way, like we're all experiencing this together. Let's all learn together. I think it's a better place to be.
I completely agree. And I think one of the things that it's that having that safe space where you can ask questions. Because one of the things I fear is that everybody feels this pressure that I need to be an expert and, you know, AI tells me exactly what it should say, even if I don't understand. But if we have a workplace where we can't ask the questions,
right?
I mean, give the job to the bots at that point in time, because we're not doing anything to build anything collectively anymore.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ad agencies where I used to work, it was Doyle and Burnback, and like, you know, Bill Burnback at the time, I mean, he was long gone when I was there, but he felt like, you know, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to fail. And I think that if that feeling comes from the top, like people shouldn't be afraid to fail, you know, that's like a great place, I think, for leaders to like a sort of inspirational, because it says like you're allowed to like ask questions, you know, you're even allowed to mess up occasionally. And you know, we're not perfect.
Right. Well, it's also the challenging of, because we all know hallucinations exist and we've worked on clients and I've, you know, tested Claude against GPT and then I just Googled it and Google had the right answer. Neither of these did. And so there's this also misguided nature from a lot of people who I think across the spectrum of age, right? There are young people who are like, just let AI do it, where they should be learning the skills to that point. Won't let my kids go near it, because you need to learn how to write. You need to learn how to research.
Right.
If I get encyclopedias in my house that were actually up to date, it would probably be a great lesson for these kids to learn. That's how we wrote a paper back in the day. But there's also this notion that when we talk about the process and eliminating the process and what does a human do and what does the computer do? Well, we have to figure that out.
Right.
Your point, Andy, we can't let the computer figure out how the process is, because that process is very dependent. And I think the misnomer is that these computers or the AI models understand the context of where you're asking the question and what your business looks like.
Right.
You know, unless you ingested, you know, 100 years of whatever the business age is, information in, and every decision every manager has made and every change you've made, then how is it really going to understand why you're making this decision? And so I worry that the decision-making process is being almost abdicated.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point. You're probably right. It probably is being abdicated.
In some instances, it may be. And this goes back to kind of the part of the conversation where we talked about training and this idea of middle management, Andy, that you kind of brought into this discussion is how are we training people to manage a business? Right. So to your point, when you start out, you have no idea. Your first day in a job after college, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to wing it. I'm going to pay attention to these guys who've been here and, you know, kind of absorb, keep my mouth shut, hopefully, and stand in the back of the room. Right.
Right.
And then you start, I understand this. And then the second you feel like you understand it and you get like to that next rung and it's like even the rung that big. Something happens and you're like, oh, it's X. And they're like, what? No, X, that's not X.
Right.
Because you still only know this much.
Right.
But
right.
You're making decisions about something that's now this big.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So then you're going to go to AI and say, well, how do I do this? Right. And I just fear that these people aren't going to know how to take their knocks, know how to fail, to your point earlier, and say, okay, this is a stupid question. I guess I'll just shut up and keep on listening, or I'll go research it and find a mentor or find somebody who's been through this scenario versus I'm just going to go to the computer and ask the computer.
So right. Nobody has been through this scenario that we're in right now. Exactly. So you can find somebody, but nobody can really, you know. We are in it together and we are learning and, you know, we just kind of stay open and stay flexible. And like I'd say, you know, also try to stay humble because there's just so much ahead of us.
Yeah, that's very good advice because I don't think people necessarily know how to be humble. So
yeah.
One of those empathy things. And
yeah.
Good. Well, I love also the thought that it really takes leadership and it takes being humble and it takes being in a safe place to really identify, okay, how does the technology work for us, guys?
Yeah.
Like we still are out to solve a problem. We can't give that to the bot.
No.
Well, it's the critical thinking aspect of what people do. And when you think about it, I mean, there's when we've talked about, you know, the Industrial Revolution in here, and it's people who've done this, right? It's our critical thinking and our curiosity and our ability to kind of see across something, a vision that I don't know, maybe computers will actually get there. Who knows? I mean, I'm sure that's what everybody wants and robots are like humans. I don't know. But it is this idea that creativity, as you were saying earlier, like it was my creativity that kind of fueled my career, right? And got me to where I was. And it's your curiosity that you wrote the articles that you write and the books you write. And I just like are we going to abdicate? Are we going to give that up? Are we going to give up creativity? Or is maybe that's what humans become, just these really creative beings who just, you know, are creating art and really cool things. And the computers are doing all the things we don't want to do. I don't know.
That would be the ideal thing. If right, if the computers would just do, like, in my opinion, all the clerical work, right? You know, the accounting, you know, pay our taxes, right? Like the boring bits, right?
Yeah.
Keeping track of our time, you know, for timesheets and all that. If they can just all do that and let us do like the fun stuff, that would be fabulous.
Yeah. Yes. All right. That's the world we're creating then, Vicky. The bar. Okay. So as we wrap up, let's talk about, we want to do a couple of like rapid fire questions. So what do you think is one thing senior leaders could do this week, if they're listening, to close the training gap? Like if you said, hey, senior leader, do X at least, start here.
I would just say, you know, be accessible, talk to your team, try to get everybody trained and try to be in those training sessions yourself also. You know, keep an open door, keep an open mind.
I'm wondering what is book, podcast, Substack that is inspiring you to keep that always learning mentality?
Well, I actually am the co-host of a podcast myself, which is called Resilient Women. I have heard amazing stories, people, survivors of all kinds of things, you know? And so I feel like hearing their stories actually helps keep me going. you know?
I love that. And I will say, as a podcast, how amazing is it that we have this new medium and it's totally cool to just go meet strangers and hear their stories? It is so inspiring. I'm 100% with you. I think it's absolutely fabulous.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's something that happened, I think, during the pandemic, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
What I like about that podcast, though, is it's real stories. And I think that's what I think for all of human history, it's about stories. It's about how we pass stories down to the next generation. I mean, even as our kids, you know, now that they're older, they look back at pictures of or videos, at least our kids now have videos of when they were younger. And it, you know, you tell that my kids are constantly like, tell me when I was young, something I did that was funny. Tell me something I did that was sassy. Tell me something I did that was X. They want to hear those stories. And I think that connects us because we find common ground. We find relatability. And we also hear it from a different perspective, which brings in that empathy lens.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I didn't realize you were going through that, or I didn't realize a person could survive that type of environment.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great way to kind of frame the future of, you know, if we do nothing right, continue to tell those stories.
Yeah.
Good. So, okay. Remind us your podcast and tell us where we can find you outside of this.
Okay. My name is Vicky Oliver. My website is VickyOliver.com. It's V-I-C-K-Y Oliver.com. My books are sold where books are sold, including Amazon and bookstores. And the podcast is called Resilient Women.
Perfect. Perfect.
And to me, people, if they write to me, I will answer their questions also.
Nice.
I love it. Good.
Thank you. This has been such a fun conversation. And even though we got off to a rocky start.
Psychologically bumpy start.
Exactly. Let's characterize that correctly. Like it.
Good.
Thank you,
guys.
Good.
Talk to you soon. One.